Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Loveline is meant for an adult audience. Loveline may contain sexually oriented content. Listener discretion is advised. Loveline with Dr. Chris starts.
3, 2, 1.
Now.
All right, y'all. It's Monday. Hope y'all had a good weekend. I'm still resting from mine. I'm still getting through it. Yeah, it was a good weekend. I had not had a weekend off in a while, so this weekend was meant to have been just restoration. But then what happens is when you finally have a weekend off, you get the laundry done, you get some of the chores done, right? But then you're like, I want to go party. I want to try to have a social life, you know? We want to have some dates, sex, friend time. And then it wears you out. So then it's just that evil cycle, right? So I'll eventually get a vacation. Oh, my God. I feel like it's a broken record, me talking about how I'm going to actually take a vacation at some point. So I'm threatening myself with it. It's going to happen, y'all. It's going to happen. Question of the night is up on our Loveline IG page. What part of your morning routine would you share to make a more positive day? We talk a lot about the importance of starting your day with positivity to kind of set a little bit of a foundation. Look, the day is going to throw a lot at you. And if you can at least start it feeling really positive and grounded, that's an important thing. So I know it's something I'm trying to do. So we'll talk about tips for that. But it's our question of the night. So weigh in on that. You can help everyone learn a few things that they can do. But tonight, Monday, we got the X-Files. So Wesley Woods will be joining us, always sharing with us some stories of exes and dating. Also, intersex activist Emily Quinn will be joining us to talk about intersex identity and activism. And also Dr. Jen Wider. We got a full show. We got a lot of people joining us tonight. right now, let's talk about some news. I have a whole lot of WTFs in the news packet for you. Ready for this one? Okay, I gotta lay down the whole story for you because there's a lot of backstory to this one. But basically, a man is dating his daughter's ex while living with his husband. You got to see the photos. It's kind of adorable. It's like a split screen. Older guy with the younger guy, and then the other side is him and his same-aged husband and their kids. Okay, so how's this get down like this? So this couple was the first UK gay couple to have a child via surrogacy. So they made headlines way back in the day. This was, let's say, it was in the 90s. Okay. So basically, Tony and Barry got married. You know, again, first gay couple to have a child via surrogacy. They had a daughter named Saffron, right? Decades later, they split up, and now one of the dads is dating Saffron's ex-boyfriend. This is why I love the world. This is why I love working with sex and dating, because it's never, ever dull. It gets a little juicier, though. So basically, the one dad, Tony, had set the daughter up with the boyfriend who is now with his husband. Make sense? Y'all with me still? And they all live together. This is why I love it. And Barry says, and I quote, this is the real deal. He says, our children are still stable, more so than other families. It's like living in a commune. But now dad's got a new fella and we're one bigger, happier family. So they're all living together. The two dads, although they're separated, still together with the boyfriend. I don't know what Saffron, little Saffron thinks about that. I mean, imagine little Saffron, she's in love, stars in her eyes, little puppy dog love. Boyfriend leaves her and starts dating her dad. And now they all live together with the other husband. Oh, Saffron, we're going to be hearing stories about you soon. You can't script some of this stuff. You know what I mean? Like you really, really, really can't. Here's another good one. Universities are rolling out degrees in cannabis. University of Maryland, great school, is now accepting applications for their 2-year Masters of Science program titled Medical Cannabis Science and Therapeutics. This is phenomenal. It's very legitimizing. So basically, if you want to study medical cannabis, more universities will be allowing things like this. But you'll be teaching basic science, clinical uses, adverse effects, public health considerations, laws, policy. Look, it's a big deal to get into cannabis now. The money you can make. I mean, it's really fascinating as, you know, California's legalized marijuana. And it's interesting to see how more, you know, the confidence with which people will talk about smoking and where they'll smoke. People sitting in the movie theater just kind of hitting it. I mean, it's it's really fascinating. So, of course, you know, people are going to want to study it. All right. I'm rambling. So, basically, there's this band called Little Mix. Never heard of them. You heard of them? You know these people? You do? Okay. Are they UK?
I think so.
Yeah? Okay. So, there's a band, Little Mix, four females. So, at their concert recently, they supported up on stage someone who wanted to propose. A fan wanted to propose to his boyfriend. Well, one of the moms in the audience was not happy and tweeted at them saying, "First and last time at your gig, a staged gay marriage proposal and kissing? My 6-year-old lad asking me questions about it now. You've taken that innocence away from my kid and my rights as a parent to tell him in my own time about things. Hashtag shame on you." Now, that's called crap parenting, because there are things in the world that your child needs to learn how to encounter and have words and vocabulary and confidence around. And gayness is not something that is bad, evil, or threatening. Acts of love, regardless of what the genders are, is something that's really beautiful. We should all be supporting, especially of minority status individuals, right? So your child is going to be okay. So here's the responses on Twitter, because you know people jumped up on Twitter with these amazing responses. If your child is 6 years old and he doesn't know that sometimes men love other men or women and other women, it's you who should be feeling shame. Do better. Someone else said, "I find it fascinating how some parents will go to great efforts to lie to their kids about the existence of Santa, Tooth Fairy, Easter Bunny for years, but they can't face explaining the very simple and normal concept of same-sex love." It's kind of where my mind goes as well. You know what I mean? Like, teach your kids the languaging, because whether you support it or not, and again, beyond me why you wouldn't support it, but even if you don't, it still exists. You still want to give your child languaging and a way to understand, talk about it. Anyway, what do I know? I had another goodie. Okay, I'll give you this other one later in the show, because we got some real zingers tonight. It's going to be a show full of a lot of zingers, so stick around for that one. All right, coming up next, we're going to be talking about the fact that pretty much these days, everything's seen as an addiction. Doesn't matter what it is. Give us a call, 833-LOVE-001, 833-LOVE-001, or slide into the DMs. Listening to Loveline with Dr. Chris on the new Channel Q and radio.com.
Loveline. This is Loveline with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.
You know, I just realized that whenever I reference the music, that the podcast listeners don't know what I'm talking about because the music's not there. Because every now and then I'll be like, "Oh, I love that song," or da 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 da, or I make a reference, and podcast people are like, "Huh?"
It was Oceanized by Billie Eilish.
I thought that was Kiki Eilish. Yeah. I'm now a Billie Eilish fan. It took me seeing her in concert at the Weekend Survive concert, which I kept calling the Life is Beautiful concert. I kept saying, "Oh, Life is Beautiful concert." And they're like, "No, it's Weekend Survive concert." I'm like, "It's all the same to me."
You deserve this.
I'm behind everything. What was that?
You need it.
What do you got for me?
I was trying to get you there.
Yas queen.
Oh, but instead he gave me some odd like bump, bump, bump. Yeah, that's our Jeffrey. He's good with the sound effects. Not. Bless. I'm coming for him. All right, so let's get into some stuff. So basically, we are in a period of our lives culturally where we are medicalizing everything. Essentially, we're pathologizing everything, which means we're making everything a disorder when it's not. Now, there's a diagnostic manual. And in theory, it's what determines what is a mental health issue and what's not. And every time they update it, which, gosh, I don't really know how often they update it. Let's say every decade-ish, another couple hundred things are added sometimes. And that many more people are now seen as mentally ill, essentially. So it's problematic. Now, the word addiction is constantly, other things are constantly being proposed to be put in there as an addiction. And we definitely sling the word addiction around very loosely, where people say, "Oh, I'm addicted to this, I'm addicted to that." Now, what's interesting is we're talking now more about online shopping and gaming, right? We're still battling the idea that sex addiction isn't real. People still use that word as though it's real. It's rejected by every mental health body and organization. There's no operational criteria that's universally used because it's been rejected as a thing. People struggle with some boundaries and compulsivity, but it's not quote unquote an addiction like drugs or alcohol. It's very different. And we're still trying to get that out there. And now we're trying to tackle the whole video game and shopping thing. What's interesting is South Korea. Check this one out. So they're a place that is claiming to have a lot of nationwide concerns. They're a place. Anyway, I don't know why I'm saying it like that. But they're trying to legislate it by putting a curfew on gaming. MEQ, did you hear that?
No.
South Korea is trying to put a curfew on gaming, where banning it between midnight and 6 a.m.
Oh, that wouldn't affect me.
It would not affect you, but how does that work? Like, who's reinforcing it? The parents are calling the cops on their kid if they're not honoring the curfew? Like, what is going on? And midnight to 6 a.m., people are generally asleep? Or are they saying for those that are up late, not, oh my gosh. Anyway, that's where we're at right now. And there's people now proposing adding shopping addiction. Now, the reason why this is problematic is because when we frame things as an addiction, like drugs and alcohol, you can remove drugs and alcohol from your life and be wrong and maybe you weren't really an addict and you'll still live a very happy, thriving life. But when we're medicalizing and calling addiction things that don't necessarily need to be removed, I think we are then negatively impacting someone's quality of life. I don't want people to not be able to play games or to go online and shop because they've now deemed it to be an addiction. But bigger than that, If we just look at it as an addiction and we think the work is just literally about getting away from these things, we're not doing the deeper work and looking at what is it a symptom of, because that's really what it is. And that's what the research is showing, is that people are turning to these things because of something else. The issue isn't the gaming or the shopping or, you know, the misuse of sexuality. It's a symptom of a larger problem, someone's depression, their anxiety, lack of coping skills, whatever it is. And that's what the research is looking at. They're saying for gaming specifically, the youth that are really hyper users of gaming, that they're generally frustrated in their lives. They're trying to find ways to escape, ways to cope with stress and anxiety. It's a safer place. It's a respite, as they say. But we need to go deeper and look at what's a symptom of, look at, you know, coping skills, et cetera, et cetera. So that's always what is important to look at. And we now know there was this really famous rat study that was used to explain addiction. And they said, you know, well, when rats are given access to drugs and alcohol, they'll repeatedly self-administer to themselves by slapping this, essentially an arm that allows it to be administered to them. And they're saying, well, look, they'll just completely hit it, getting high until they die. Now, someone luckily was finally smart enough to say, okay, but wait a minute. That doesn't mimic real life. In the real world, we are not trapped in a little cage with nothing to compete with the access to the drug. So the animal was understandably going towards the one source of any kind of pleasure. They then did another study. Thankfully, someone was smart enough to call this out, where they said, let's give them other options and see what they choose. So they set up this thing called Rat Park. And essentially, it was a rat park where they had multiple things that they could do and play with. And guess what wound up being the case? They no longer chose the drugs because they had access to other things that gave meaning and value and fun to their lives. And so the study was showing that addiction isn't exactly what we think it is, and that addiction is a sign of disconnection, and that the opposite of drug use is connection, right? And that if you have other things in your life that give you pleasure and have meaning and value, that you'll be more drawn to that. And that's actually the solution for people's long-term sobriety, is really developing a life that has meaning to you, that you can have in addition to your use, and you choose the things that give you wider meaning. And that's also what I see in my clinical practice, that no one stays sober if what's challenging their sobriety is just a life full of depression and lack and loneliness. You have to build up a life that has worth and meaning to you that will make you then want to engage in it and be present in it and with it. And that's part of the work, right? So the drugs and alcohol are a symptom of something else. We also now know, thankfully, we're using a trauma-informed model, that a lot of these things are the result of trauma. We literally have the stats. And we look at how much the chance of addiction rises based on the amounts of early adverse childhood experiences. And it's really, really, really powerful. And so the work is actually about trying to remove trauma from people's lives, which would set them up to not need to utilize these things. Anyway, we just need to stop making everything an addiction. It's quite fascinating these days. So we'll be talking more about this stuff, though. Coming up next, we're going to be talking to an intersex activist about intersexuality, which is something that we're talking about more, thank God, and dispelling some myths. So stick around. Listening to Loveline with Dr. Chris on the new Channel Q and radio.com.
Loveline. This is Loveline with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.
All right, we're back. And tonight we're talking with Emily Quinn, intersex activist. Emily, welcome to Loveline.
Thank you.
So I wanted to have you on for a multitude of reasons. I've been traveling the country doing a little bit of a lecture tour, and I've been trying to talk more about just diversity in terms of sexual expression, gender expression, bodies expressions. And then I online just kept coming across a multitude of articles on intersexuality. So I wanted to have you on to help our listeners better understand. So I thought maybe we could just start with defining it. I know that there's a lot of misinformation out there. How do you, as an activist, define and explain to the general population what intersex means?
So intersex basically describes people whose bodies don't fit the male-female binary, is like the easiest way to describe it. We have a multitude of different variations in our development, whether it's our gonads, chromosomes, genitalia, hormone production, hormone responses, all sorts of different possibilities for intersex bodies.
And it's interesting because I know, you know, again, when I was traveling and lecturing and people would try to problematize or talk about some myths, I'd always say to everyone, you know, not everyone is even necessarily aware themselves, right? Where it's the rare person that maybe goes and gets a chromosomal test done. So in your personal journey, how did you become made aware of your intersexuality?
So for me, I found out when I was 10. It actually runs in my family. So my mom knew it was a possibility, and she wanted me to be able to go through puberty with expectations for my body just in case, so that I wasn't, you know, expecting to go through a typical cis female puberty. So she took me into the doctor.
Which is like a beautiful moment, because I also jokingly am always reporting on these ridiculous gender reveal events. And I was talking about the ones that go wrong where like a pipe bomb exploded. It was supposed to be blue powder for a boy and it injured someone. And then they started like a 37-acre forest fire over some other version. I always say to them, you know, like you think we don't necessarily know everything about someone's body or gender expression or sexuality. But when people are born, we make these problematic assumptions. So I'm always trying to just tell people, hold space for the idea that there's so much diversity and creativity that we might not be aware of. So for you, you know, you said it runs in your family, so you're able to kind of get that family support. I think that's amazingly beautiful, because I saw a stat and it said that intersexuality is as common as redheads, being a redhead in our culture.
Yeah, intersex people, it's a global statistic. So 2% of the global population, which it's also just, that's a very basic estimate. And it's actually starting to be seen that it's probably a lot higher than that. It's just, you know, people don't even talk about bodies or sex or gender or anything anyway. So trying to get accurate statistics has been pretty difficult.
Yeah, I saw it was probably about 3 years ago, maybe, you know this. It was an African runner in the Olympics, and she found out via testing to enter the Olympics, and it kind of started some of the discussion. Do you remember that story?
Yeah, there's a couple different Olympians. It's probably Caster Semenya who you're thinking of.
Okay.
And I believe that she knew already that she was intersex, but that it just enters in a whole new realm of genetic testing, and that's what she had to deal with a lot, and they were trying to get her to minimize her body's hormones and trying to, like, you know, take blockers and everything. But similarly, like we've talked about in the activism realm, how, you know, Michael Phelps is a better swimmer because of the, I forget what it is, like the acid that his body produces, that it's a natural, like, you know, variation that gives him a leg up or swim up, I don't know.
And an arm up.
But when it's, you know, both, like, Caster being a black woman, also intersex, like, you know, they're making her limit her, what her body naturally does on its own. And so there's, like, just, there's a lot to unpack there.
Well, and it came up also here in the studio. I was on one of the other shows talking about something unrelated, and they were talking about the idea of how we're now getting rid of separate gendered categories for, like, the Emmys, where now it's just outstanding performer versus best female or male. And the topic of sports came up, and I said, you know, wouldn't it be great if we got to a place where people just tried out and they got on a team and it wasn't separated by men's or female? And the hosts were saying, yeah, but the bodies are different. And I said, well, not only is there maybe the difference in that, but I said, and we were talking about intersexuality. I said, there's some people that chromosomally don't necessarily fit into that binary. What team should they be trying out on? And, you know, it really starts to kind of change the entire conversation when we realize the diversity of what's possible. I geek out on this stuff. Other people panic, but like, I love seeing how beautifully diverse and colorful the world is. So as an activist, I'm going to make the guess that you're on the side of what I'm seeing a lot of people talk about more as well, about not putting children through problematic surgeries not putting them through any surgery that's not necessary, and especially trying to honor a child's own autonomy and let them as an adult make decisions. Yes?
Yeah, 100%. I think the idea of informed consent is something you hear a lot in the medical community and in the activism realm as well, but just the amount of medically unnecessary surgeries that happen on intersex babies, children, infants, teenagers is overwhelming. And so most of us are on the stance that, you know, no surgery should happen on a child unless there's a medical reason. And that, you know, is an actual medical reason. For instance, you know, there's surgery that people will do to move a boy's urethra so that he can pee standing up. But is that medically necessary? Not exactly. So there's so many different nuances there. But those surgeries cause, like, for instance, that one I was just speaking of with the urethra, like that surgery causes a whole host of possible consequences, multiple surgeries throughout that person's life. And it's this idea of making this child fit a standard of normal.
Yeah.
And for instance, you know, wanting this child to have a normal, like normal genitals. Yet when you perform surgery, there's going to be scar tissue, which means it's going to make it different anyway. And so if you don't need to do this surgery that could cause a host of complications, why not just leave it be and let the child choose when they get older?
And as a culture, let's just be better and stop stigmatizing differences.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, just psychologically be more loving and supportive towards each other. And before we go, I wanted to ask you one final question, because this came up in an article I was looking at. It was something I hadn't ever really kind of pondered. So I want to ask you. So the intersex is often put in with the LGBTQIA acronym. What are your thoughts on that? Are you supportive of it in there?
I am. I say that you should totally use the I in the acronym if you actually have the ability and capacity to support intersex people. If you're using the I simply so that you can appear like you are quote unquote woke, or you are trying to, you know, like
performative allyship.
Right. Performative allyship. Exactly. Because then often times if there's a space where intersex people think they're safe, it ends up being a lot less safe for them if they aren't actually in a safe space.
Yeah, well said. It should be about the safety. Emily Quinn, where can people find you on socials?
On Instagram at Emma Lord, EmmiLordy. So there's a Y on the end. Everywhere else, Emma Lord.
Beautiful. Thank you so much. Thanks for being on Loveline. Have an awesome night. All right, coming up next, we're going to be sliding into those DMs. We got a question of the night up on our Loveline IG page. Tonight's question is about morning routines and having a positive day. So weigh in on that. Listening to Loveline with Dr. Chris on the new channel Q and radio.com.
Loveline. This is Loveline with Dr. Chris
on channel Q.
All right, we're back. We got our question of the night up on our Loveline IG page. Before we slide into the DMs, though, let's just quickly go over something that's happening right now. It's kind of important. The Chick-fil-A. I know. We got to talk about it. Why are you making that face? I'm getting faces. Basically, Chick-fil-A on Monday said that it's no longer going to be funding two Christian charities with histories of opposing same-sex marriage. So yay on that. That's due to all the pushback, and Chick-fil-A is literally trying to get into airports and schools and being rejected. But we still have the, you know, look, it's not completely handled, meaning we need a little more transparency because they're also funding money to organizations like Focus on the Family and some other ones that are really anti-LGBTQIA. So, you know, great on that, but there's still more work to do. They also send a lot of money to the Salvation Army. Now, what's interesting about that is the Salvation Army is historically anti-gay and has turned away people that are gay or trans. Now, they're coming out because of Ellie Goulding saying, I'm not going to perform for the Salvation Army because you're anti-gay. And they're saying, we've changed our ways. So, you know, it remains to be seen if Chick-fil-A and Salvation Army can kind of step it up and actually care about human rights. Okay, let's slide in those DMs, though.
Sliding into the DMs.
Sliding DMs is brought to you by our friends at Trojan Condoms. It's a big old sexy world, and we want you to explore with confidence. Here we go. Hey, Dr. Chris. My girlfriend and I are concerned with why and how my penis keeps tearing at the tip after sex. We aren't crazy rough. Yes, we use lube. Bam. You knew where I was going to go with that one. But yes, I am uncircumcised. Is there something that we could do to avoid this? It's only a micro tear, but I'd prefer not to be stinging after sex. And I prefer that for you as well. So there's 1,000 things. I have more questions to ask you, so I'm going to give you just a basic rundown. Number one, absolutely please let it heal. Whatever that's going to mean, like no masturbation, no sex, let it heal, because you don't want an infection and you also don't want to create the tear on top of a tear and also have to worry about things like scar tissue. There are some exercises to stretch out the skin because I don't know if it's that the foreskin's very tight over your penis and it's not as, as elastic as some other people's uncircumcised penises are. There are some people where it's really tight, the skin, and it just doesn't have a lot of give. And so sex can really pull on it. And I don't know if that's what you mean when you say tip or if you mean urethral area tip. So I'm not 100% sure what you mean by tip. But some people do have to get some version of adult circumcision if it's the foreskin that's tearing or causing problems. I'm not sure if that's what you mean. Usually though, it does through use create stretching, but I would actually talk to a urologist and see what they can recommend because, you know, get in on that one. Slide the DMs is brought to you by our friends at Trojan Condoms. It's a big old sexy world and we want you to explore with confidence. Coming up next, the X-Files. We got Wesley Woods joining us, listening to Loveline with Dr. Chris on the new Channel Q and radio.com.
Loveline. This is Loveline with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.
All right, we're back and now it's time for some X-Files. So we got Wesley Woods with us. Wes, quickly, before you drop something on us, I just wanted to bring up the general topic of friends with exes because that was our question of the night last week. I think it was Thursday night. It was, what are your thoughts on friends with exes? Do you know, I was like shaming the listeners' responses. Like 90% were like, nope, not okay, bad sign, danger, danger. And I was like, y'all are a mess. I said, I thought the Loveline listeners were doing better. Like, it triggers people.
Why? But you know, like that's, you also have, let's take a demographic of how long they've been separated, how old these listeners are. I mean, there's a lot of growth that has to go into really getting to be in a good place, healthy,
yeah.
Not just good, but healthy place with your ex.
Sure.
And sometimes that comes with a lot of trials, tribulations, and own personal stories and experiences.
I know, that's right. It's a good goal, though. I think it's a really beautiful goal. And I think I understand that it can take time and you have maturity, but I at least wanted everyone to see it as like a decent goal. But it just seemed like it was so triggering because we live in a world where most people, you know, they practice toxic forms of monogamy where they just see everyone and everything as a threat. And it's like, that's not the best way to move through the world, is thinking everyone's a threat to your partner or your relationship. How exhausting.
Right. And I mean, at some point, you got to appreciate your ex because they either steered you into the direction where you're currently going, or they hopefully have taught you something, or you got to be grateful for the exes that came before your exes.
That's
This is a melting pot. We're all just trying to do the best that we can. You got to cut people some slack and start meeting people in the middle.
Yeah, I agree. Because I got to meet your new boo this past weekend, and he didn't seem to be
a friend. I mean, it was probably not the best scenario that I wanted y'all to meet in, but you know, you got to meet, and there'll be a lot more meet and greets, and I had a good time. He seemed to really like you, and we kind of giggled a little bit afterwards, because he's like, I don't see how the two of y'all ever worked out, because we're both a little crazy.
Oh, wait, he saw a little my cuckoo dropped out that quick?
Well, I mean, he just knows that we're very big personalities.
Oh.
And that we expect a lot, show up very big and loud, and aren't going to necessarily hide that from people at any point in time. And so
true.
He was just giggling a little bit because he has gotten to know me. recognizes that, you know, we are the same same coin, just opposite sides.
That's right. We lead with big, bold authenticity. So what stories, what X story do you got for us tonight?
You'll not believe this, but there is a man in North Carolina who sued his ex-wife's love interest, partner, infidelity mate, whatever you want. He sued the man that was cheating with his wife for $150,000 and won.
Now, right now, do you know how many people right now are like calling up a lawyer, like one of those, like, you know, 1-800-LAW, and they're like, yo, I heard I can sue the person who's cheated on my ex and get 100K out of that. They're going to be blowing up.
I know. Well, apparently there was some law that goes into effect where if someone is acknowledgeably trying to taint or hurt the sanctity of marriage through this law in North Carolina, this is how he was able to file this lawsuit and ended up winning. Long story short, they went to some marriage counseling courses, and when it wasn't working, he got suspicious and hired a private detective. Come to find out, the business colleague of hers was coming over for some, private dinners, wink, wink. And so, long story short, he is. Well, technically, if he doesn't get the money, the guy, it's going to go onto his record as debt. Which I'm just so dumbfounded by all of this. I'm like, what?
Wait. I love that in North Carolina, they see marriage as so sacred that if anyone, quote unquote, comes in between or taints it, that you can sue them.
Yes.
Wow. I wonder how many other places have that kind of like old school law. Wow.
I mean, this is the first I've ever heard of it. It's almost 2020. I don't think very many people have heard about this because I think a lot of people would have tried to file this suit.
Yeah, some people are owed hundreds of thousands of dollars.
I mean, it's crazy. It makes you question like whether or not you want to try. I mean, does the man even do you think the man knew that they were married? Clearly, I guess, right? Or there would not have been a case to go against.
Oof. But, I mean,
oh my God, then you get in the whole thing of like if someone's not wearing a ring, they don't ever know. Like, I mean, I've known people to like play 3 or 4 people at a time.
That's right. Yeah. Wives in different cities. I always wondered how people had the time and energy to pull that off. Like I barely can pull off one relationship. Like how am I going to pull off a couple marriages? Jeez.
Barely. I mean, I'm O for however many I've had, still haven't gone through with the wedding. So, you know, I can barely pull off anything. You can make it a year with me. I'm pretty impressed. I mean, holy cow.
That's what you should be able to sue for, is what someone put you through for that year, not the cheating, right? Like,
right.
Geez.
Well, like, she got nothing, like a slap on the wrist, just broken up with. Like, how is the other party? It was so crazy to sit and just read.
Well, these things never cease to amaze me.
Well, and I wanted to know what she was cooking for dinner, you know, like, what got him over to the house and made him spend $750,000 on dinner?
And I get where people are hurt. Like, it's hard when you find out someone did you wrong or cheated on you. I can understand the wounding. But then just to sue the other person, it's like the wife was the one who was most to blame, right? She's not getting sued. It's the guy who was cheating with her. But, like, she's the one who should have known better, right? She should have left her current
Exactly. That's why I'm just so like dumbfounded that not only did he win, but he went after the person who's not even responsible for caring about the relationship. Ultimately, I mean, he doesn't give a shit. I mean, he's not invested in it. There ain't a ring on his finger, but you know what? He'll think twice about messing with a married woman.
Yeah, especially when it comes to the price tag like that. You got to ask questions. You start dating someone, you better make sure they're not married. You're going to have a big old fine.
Or just drive down South Carolina. Maybe the laws are a little bit different. You won't have to worry about it.
Oh, bless. I hope we don't have anything like that in California. But you know, as soon as we get off, I'm going to go Google that.
Google it, because I might need to know, too, just in case. You know, did you ever cheat on me? I'll just find someone that said that you didn't, and then we'll go split it. See, that's how people are going to start getting smart.
Wesley Woods, where can people find you?
You can go online, you know, the Twitter, the Instagram, the Facebook, be Wesley Woods. It's that simple. That's all I have.
All right. Thanks, man. Have a good night.
You too. See ya.
Coming up next, we're going to be with Dr. Jen Wider talking about forced pushing in pregnancy and the damage that does. And we got a question of the night up on our Loveline IG page. So weigh in on that. We'll be breaking that on down later in the show. Listening to Loveline with Dr. Chris on the new channel Q and radio.com.
Love Line.
This is Love Line with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.
All right, we're back. We got Dr. Jen Wider with us, women's health expert. So tonight we wanted to talk about something that actually came up via a meme I saw on someone's social media account. And it was really fascinating because I've never heard this talked about, but it was about the damage that's done during labor with pushing.
Yes.
I'd never heard someone talk about that because in my mind that was just a standard practice, and I never heard anyone problematize some of what that does.
You know, this is one of those topics that probably should be explored universally, I think, because it is incredibly unnatural, I think, for pregnant people to be conventionally on their back, which is, you know, when we think about it, a pregnant person is told to lie on their back and push and push and push, and it's sort of this directed pushing. You know, if you ever saw those scene in a movie where there's someone laying down and this pregnant person is about to give labor and everyone around is a chorus of people saying push and everyone's counting to 10. You know, the problem is that if you look at the data, there's a lot of vaginal tearing based on this unnatural pushing that may be directed pushing rather than pushing that would be natural. And that's really what we're talking about here. Forced pushing sort of creates stress for someone who is giving birth. And it's almost self-defeating in a sense, including the position that we picture when we think of a pregnant person giving birth.
Right.
The picture of lying directly on your back really doesn't work with gravity so much.
Right? And, I mean, that's always the first thing I think of when I see that is I would naturally think one would want to stand.
Or just squat, which
We've
seen, you know, it before things became more conventional in hospitals and we were controlling births and labor and delivery, there are pictures of people squatting to give birth. And, you know, that is just a natural way to go. It works with gravity. And unfortunately, well, here's the situation. Of course, in a conventional setting within a hospital, we see a lot of the same sort of thing that I described, this standardized pushing, this directed pushing with medical personnel around you.
Right.
The issue is that, you know, we've had very successful, healthy pregnancies with this, but I do think that if you look at the data, and I took a good long, hard look at this data before coming on to do the segment, Chris, and it's interesting because if you look at the stats, 9 in 10 women suffer from some kind of vaginal tearing during childbirth. And the damage can vary greatly, right? So you have a pregnant person may be left suffering from, you know, these first-degree tears, first, second-degree tears, and it can go all the way to a third and fourth-degree laceration and tear, which can cause incontinence and lifelong nerve problems. So the degree at which people tear is very different. But if you look at this specific study that comes out of this Royal College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists in England, they changed what they did in terms of forced pushing and directed pushing. Instead, they allowed women to push when they felt like they needed to. And so if a pregnant person felt the urge to push, because there is this natural urge to push without a doubt, but it isn't natural to hold it for a certain time and to be directed to hold it for 10 seconds or whatever you see at a specific hospital. The push was just spontaneous when someone needed to push, and these midwives worked with people to breathe through other types of contractions, and they significantly lowered the number of tears and lacerations in this study. So, you know, I know you know all of this, Chris. Like when we look at some of these scientific studies, we always want to look at what the sample size
That's
is
right.
because you want to make sure I'm not talking to you about 7 women, right? And
right.
4 of them had tears and the other 3 didn't. But there is a lot of science and research that backs this up. And I think what's really interesting, at least for conventional practice within the United States, a lot of studies show that pregnant people should follow their own urge to push in a much more stressful, you know, less stressful environment, and they should only push when there's a natural urge to do so, and you'd have a good chance of preventing tears and muscle weakness in the pelvis after the birth.
And it's interesting.
And that's scientifically proven.
And I love it, because I feel like we're slowly moving back towards honoring the body's natural intelligence, and that's kind of what I'm hearing in this.
Yes.
Like your body will naturally walk you through what you need to do. But that earlier number was so profound for me that, like, 9 out of 10 will have tearing that's not quote-unquote necessary, and the forced pushing I just thought was such an accepted practice. Now, would one go into the hospital hospital and if they said, listen, I don't want to do forced pushing. I want to kind of just let my body naturally push when it feels a need to, would that be supported or would that be challenged?
Well, I think, you know, it really depends on who the practitioners are. I think in a conventional hospital, westernized medicine in this country, I think there would be quite a bit of pushback right now. I think if you had, you know, a birthing coach or a home birth, I think that a birthing plan is probably something that would be put into place with a pregnant person's desires and their opinion on what they need to do. There are ways, of course, to lower the chance of a vaginal tear during childbirth, including perineal massage. And when you and I talked about episiotomy a couple months ago, there used to be these episiotomies that were given to prevent all of this, you know, routine episiotomies to prevent tearing and lacerations. And that became, you know, routine episiotomies are no longer recommended.
Okay.
And that was to prevent all of this. Now that we're not, you know, doing routine episiotomies, which are oftentimes unnecessary and can lead to some serious consequences, there are, you know, a lot of people tear and lacerate. But we need to remember that the head of the baby stretches the vaginal tissue. Even though the vaginal tissue is quite elastic, the head of the baby is another reason why there are lacerations and tears. It's not just from unnecessary pushing.
Okay.
So there's a lot of factors at play here during the birth of a baby. But I think that, you know, you want to go to a healthcare provider that will honor your wishes. And I love what you said about honoring the body, because it is true. The body really can walk you through this. And most people that are giving birth will have a natural urge to squat or to give birth in a gravity positive position rather than laying on your back and pushing and pushing and pushing until you're exhausted and you may have an unnecessary consequence due to that.
Yeah, it's so fascinating. I mean, we just get so familiar with what we see and what we've been told that we just kind of accept it and don't challenge it. So I like
it's a bit robotic. I completely 100%. Agree with you.
And I can't even imagine the exhaustion. Dr. Jen Wider, where can people find you?
I'm at Dr. Wider, DRWIDER, across social media, Chris.
Brilliant. Thank you so much. Have an awesome night.
Thanks so much. Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye. Coming up next, we got a question of the night, so still some time to weigh in on that on our Loveline IG page. Listening to Loveline with Dr. Chris on the new channel Q and radio.com.
Loveline. This is Loveline with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.
All right, we're back. Tonight's question of the night is about morning routine. It makes you have more of a positive day. Now, what the experts say you need to do, is to start the day with a gratitude list. It's kind of familiar, right? List all the things that you're thankful for. Smile. Gotta love that one. Smile more. Just smile more. Cold water. Hydration, sunlight, meditation, and music. Ah, yes, the healing effects of music. So that's an important one. But what'd y'all say about your morning routines? Have a more positive day? Wake up 1 hour earlier, not feel so rushed. It's a great way to be mindful. That's actually really smart. I think that's one of the things I need to start doing, is I kind of cut it really close, and then my morning's a hurried rush, and it just kind of starts the day off in a little bit of a, you know, pseudo-manic kind of way. So I'm into that one. Someone else said avoid social media when you first wake up. I think that's another great one as well. You don't know what you're going to encounter, and you don't want to start your day off on a negative foot, or maybe seeing something that makes you feel bad about yourself or whatever it is. So I totally support that one as well, delaying the social media piece as long as possible. Someone else said what they do to start their day in a more positive way: working out for movement, not weight loss. Well said. Work out to move your body, right? Get some energy. Someone else said sex. Yes, I think that's a good one. Solo or partner, depending on what's going on in your life. Right now, for me, it would just be solo, but that's cool. Someone else said things they do to start their day in a more positive way. Stretching. You know, that reminds me, I got to stretch. I definitely do not stretch enough. That's on the list. I'm always trying to drink more water and stretch. So thank you for that reminder. I think that's great. Someone said enjoying a walk with my dog. I'm into it. I don't have a dog, though, but I think that's great. Somebody else said the way that they start the day in a more positive way, showering with together. It's cute. Although I never got into that. I always want a shower with me is a thing I do alone. Yeah, I don't need you all up in my shower with me, but it's cute for some people. For me, it's just a very solo process about getting clean. Never eroticize that. Someone said the part where all my kids go to school. That's how your day gets positive. I hear you. Someone said 5 minutes to stretch, listen to music, then have some herbal tea or lemon water makes my day. Yeah, I like that. Because again, it's like slowing down, easing into your day, not hitting the ground running. Someone else said meditation and breakfast. I'm into it. Somebody else said the way that they start the day positive. It's a new day. Yes, it is. It's true. It's a redo. It's a start over. Someone said eating breakfast, gratitude list, waking up, take your time. Got self-care over here. Someone else said listen to some pump-up music or favorite podcast. Get me smiling and laughing. I actually like that as well, right? Start the day smiling, laughing. Someone said after I finish my workout, I sit in the sauna for 10 minutes. Ugh, I love that. It's such a gift. All right, thanks to all those that participated. We're going to stop it there. Coming up next, we're going to be sliding into those DMs, listening to Loveline with Dr. Chris on the new Channel Q and radio.com.
Loveline. This is Loveline with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.
All right, time to slide in those DMs.
Sliding into the DMs.
Sliding the DMs is brought to you by our friends at Trojan Condoms. It's a big old sexy world, and we want you to explore with confidence. Here we go. Hey, Dr. Chris. So I always feel bad when I hear you say to evaluate your past relationships and how you make people feel. I make sure to leave lovingly and not burn it down because looking at my history, I'm an expert at that. I'm 25 and I don't know if it was seeing my dad's anger issues and abuse towards my mom, but every relationship I've had, I've either cheated or just sabotaged or just silently hated the person for months until I randomly just dumped them with no emotion. My question is, I'm now in a relationship that's over a year in and I don't want the pattern to repeat and everything is great, but I'm kind of waiting for the other shoe to drop. Is it possible I grew out of my behavior or is it something that if I don't address head on will keep repeating? I think it's both. I think maybe you have outgrown. I mean, just this question tells me you have awareness. So just operate from a different standard, hold yourself to, you know, a higher standard. But it's also dependent on who we're in a relationship with, right? If we're dating someone healthier, inherently, we hope that it'll inspire us to be better as well. But just keep the consciousness. Like, don't act out those old patterns. That's really what it's about. Having awareness of what the problematic patterns were, knowing what a better model for running relationships is. And then sticking with that, not repeating the old behavior. It's totally doable though. But no, I don't think you just inherently grow out of it, but we do grow up and hopefully have more maturity. So, you know, keep the focus. You can pull this off. Sign the DMs is brought to you by our friends at Trojan Condoms because it's a big old sexy world. We want you to explore with confidence. That's our show. It's podcasted at wearechannelq.com. Back tomorrow night. Thanks for hanging out. Y'all have an awesome, awesome night.